Are we good? Oh my gosh. Good evening. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I'll just leave that. Tonight's talk is, it's just wonderful to be here actually on Thursday night. It's a treat for me. I don't usually get to come on Thursday night. I'm a Sunday night regular. So it's good to see familiar faces and new faces. And so I'm excited to talk about right speech. I'm going to bring this down a little. Sorry. Right speech and my efforts at taking up the practice of not complaining. One thing I have learned in this process is that we teach best what we most need to learn. So this is what I'll be teaching about. It's been a wonderful practice for me. So in terms of speech, this is actually really important in our practice. How we speak, what we say, how we say it. The Buddha taught extensively on speech. It's part of the Eightfold Path. Half of the 10 grave precepts are relating to speech. That's pretty important. And so we'll hear tonight from Bodhidharma, from Dogen, from others in the Zen tradition, their words on how to practice with our speech. We'll also hear from Shantideva. Shantideva is one of my favorite teachers. Shantideva's Way of the Bodhisattva is kind of an instruction manual for becoming a Buddha, and he has some beautiful ways to talk about how we should talk. And then I'll share about the actual practice that I discovered and have taken up and I'm still in the midst of. It's called a complaint-free world. I'll say more about that. In my reading about this topic, I saw a little essay written by Thanissaro Bhikkhu, who's a Theravadan scholar. And his teacher said, if you can't control your mouth, there's no way you can hope to control your mind. So it's a good place to start, actually, to filter a little bit of what's going out. So that's the broad outline of what we'll be hearing about today. So my own inspiration to take this up I am the chair of the Harmony Committee here at the Zen Community of Oregon. And if you don't know that there is one or what that is, this is a great opportunity for me to tell you what that is. The Harmony Committee is a group of people who are kind of at the ready to assist members of the Sangha who might be in conflict, or if there's some sort of a conflict brewing, or some sort of discomfort, or just a little bit of friction that you might want some help with. And we have, in the past, we've had a trifold brochure that talks about a five-part process to dealing with conflict in the Sangha. The first step, is to talk to the person directly, the person that you might have an issue with. It's a really great idea. I recommend it highly. But that's sometimes difficult, of course. And so the second step is to ask for help in talking to the person directly. So this is where the Sangha Harmony Committee comes in, that a person from the committee is willing to just bear witness and assist in a direct conversation. There are other steps, and I have seen the process work really beautifully, actually, very, very successfully, very effectively. And I have also seen it not be used, and that is less effective. That is less effective. So my inspiration to take this up actually came from the closing of some 12-step meetings use this sentence in their closing. or this phrasing. It goes, talk to each other, reason things out with someone else, but let there be no gossip or criticism of one another. Instead, let the understanding, love, and peace of the program grow in you one day at a time. And I thought, oh my gosh, isn't that beautiful? Talk to each other, reason things out with someone else, but let there be no gossip or criticism of one another. Instead, let the understanding, love, and peace of the program grow in you one day at a time. And I thought, well, how can I promote this in the Sangha? Wouldn't that be wonderful if that was something that we lived by or were inspired by? And there's a saying by Gandhi. He said, we must live what we want others to learn. So I thought, well, I will take this up. And so I Googled around and impulsively found a reference to this A Complaint Free World, acomplaintfreeworld.org. And so I just decided, well, yes, I'll do this. And I posted it online just right away without really even researching what I had publicly said I would be doing. I had no idea. I will talk more about this later, my direct experience with this practice. I want to talk a little bit about, though, the Buddha's teachings and other teachings and how this complaint-free world practice actually fits really beautifully into the Buddha's teachings. So a few words from the sutras. And this is about right speech as part of the Eightfold Path. The Blessed One said, "Monks, I will teach you noble right concentration with its supports and requisite conditions. Listen and pay close attention." Now what, monks, is noble right concentration with its supports and requisite conditions? Any singleness of mind equipped with these seven factors, right view, right resolve, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, and right mindfulness, is called noble right concentration with its supports and requisite conditions. Concentration is really our focus here in Zen, is it not? This is really what we do, and yet all of these other things fit in with each other. So in regards to right speech, he says, "One discerns wrong speech as wrong speech and right speech as right speech. And what is wrong speech? Lying, divisive tale-bearing, abusive speech, and idle chatter. This is wrong speech. One tries to abandon wrong speech and enter into right speech. This is one's right effort. One is mindful to abandon wrong speech and to enter and remain in right speech. This is one's right mindfulness. Thus, these three qualities, right view, right effort, and right mindfulness, run and circle around right speech." So the elements of the Eightfold Path all circle around each other. And if we take up one, we are actually taking all of them up. And here's another way I have heard the definition of right speech. And what is right speech? Abstaining from lying, from divisive or slanderous speech, from abusive or harsh speech, and from idle chatter. So lying intentionally is key here. I mean, we can accidentally say something that isn't true or something we thought was true, but it's really about the intention. And that can be rooted in greed. If we are lying to try to get something for ourselves, it can be rooted in anger to try to hurt somebody, and it can be rooted in delusion because we think that it could be a benefit somehow. The Buddha said, "One should not tell a deliberate lie, even in jest." Don't even joke about that. It's very serious. And then slanderous speech is divisive causes dissension. It alienates people from each other. So just looking at the result of speech, we can see that it can cause that. We've certainly seen that. We see it all the time, unfortunately, right? It's all over the news, all over the internet. And there are so many more opportunities for speech to come into our consciousness, not just verbally, but electronically and in the written word. harsh and abusive speech includes scolding, reviling, reproving, insulting. And the definition of that is ascribing an offensive quality that detracts from one's dignity. So anything we might say about someone that would detract from their dignity. Sarcasm is another form of harsh or abusive speech, a compliment in a tone that twists the meaning, causing pain. And finally, idle chatter, talk that lacks purpose or depth, stirs up the mind. So instead of those things, speaking the truth means that we first have to be in accord with what's true. We first have to align ourselves with what's actually true. What's actually true is what actually is. When we're in a complaining mind, it's like there's a film over the reality of our life with some sort of drawing or picture, right? The corrections. This should be over here. This is wrong. Don't like it there. And if we remove that film, we can see things as they actually are. And when we speak from there, being with things as they are, it's much closer to truth. In the Zen Mountain Monastery tradition of the precepts, they refer to it as seeing the perfection. Seeing the perfection. So speaking the truth, speaking speech that promotes friendship and harmony, that originates from a mind of loving kindness and sympathy. So we can feel that when our speech is actually coming from a place of goodwill and a place of loving kindness. Having patience in regards to harsh speech. We have to just hold ourselves. Even if somebody says something to us that's difficult and we want to lash out. So the Buddha had some criteria. He taught about criteria on deciding what is worth saying. And it's interesting. What I ended up doing whenever I read that sutra, it's spoken in that formal Buddhist language, right? And it's repetitive so that they could remember it. So I ended up making a chart so that I could actually understand what was don't say it or say it at the right time, or basically your two choices. So for example, in the case of words that the Tathagata knows to be unfactual, untrue, unbeneficial, unendearing, and disagreeable to others, he doesn't say them. Okay, that's pretty simple. It's all those things, don't say that. In the case of words that the Tathagata knows to be factual, to be true, but they are also unbeneficial, unendearing, and disagreeable, he doesn't say those either. Just because it's true doesn't mean you should say it. If it's not beneficial, if it's not endearing or pleasant, don't say that. In the case of words that the Tathagata knows to be factual, true, beneficial, but unendearing and disagreeable to others, what do you think? Don't say it. Don't say it. It's factual. It's beneficial. It's not pleasant. He says he has a sense of the proper time for saying them. Occasionally, if you have a really good friend who's willing to tell you something that you don't want to hear, that might be a time, right? Hogan is very good about that. So, unfactual, untrue, unbeneficial, but endearing, pleasant. Should you say it? Sounds good. Isn't true. Isn't beneficial. So it's like flattery, right? Don't say it. That's what he said. Don't say it. Finally, in the case of words the Tathagata knows to be factual, true, beneficial, and endearing and agreeable, go for it. Say it at the proper time. You can pass around this chart. It's really helpful. So in terms of the 10 precepts, 5 of them related to speech, not to lie but to speak the truth, not to speak of others' faults but to be understanding and sympathetic, not to praise oneself by criticizing others, but to overcome my own shortcomings. Not to give vent to anger, but to seek its source. It's not to not be angry, but giving vent to anger in that way, speaking angry, angrily, and not to speak ill of the three treasures, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, but to cherish and uphold them. So I want to read a little bit from Daido Lori from Zen Mountain Monastery, our Dharma uncle. And this is about not speaking of others' errors and faults, and this is in the positive frame. They refer to this as see the perfection in others. And he talks about Dogen and Bodhidharma in here. So in his teachings, Master Dogen points out, in the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we are the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, and the same practice. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Do not destroy the way. How incredibly true that statement is. Ultimately, you cannot destroy the way. It has always been here. It will always be here. It reaches everywhere. It cannot be created or destroyed. And yet, when we attack one another, causing conflict and turmoil, we cloud the beauty of this life. We cover it with opinions and veil it with confusion. Bodhidharma taught, self-nature is inconceivably wondrous. In the faultless Dharma, not speaking of others' faults is called the precept of refraining from speaking of others' errors and faults. The whole universe is this wondrous self-nature. Not a particle is outside of it. It is the true self, the original, bare form of all sentient beings. If you speak of others to inflate your sense of self and to elevate your self-importance, you break this precept. To point out what is wrong with someone else is to place the person below you and create separation. But from the absolute point of view, who is the other? Where is the other? This very body and mind fills the universe. There is no outside nor other. He says, in the old days within some spiritual communities, there was an internal rule of not discussing the problems of Sangha members with anyone outside the community. Such an attitude, frequently fueled by fear, tended to be a whitewash, a conspiracy of silence. When people were abusing power and hurting others, everybody looked the other way. This is enabling and hypocritical, is not taking responsibility for the precepts in one's life. But at the same time, there are skillful as well as damaging ways of doing what needs to be done. Attaining the clarity to appreciate that difference and acting accordingly are the key to harmony. If even the slightest thought of self and other enters into the action, you violate the precept. To speak of others' errors and faults in any way violates the precept. When necessary, speak of others' errors and faults not to serve the self, but only for the good of others. And then finally, to even give rise to the thought that there is a self and an other is the most deluded view of all. So, in the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we are the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, the same practice for all sentient beings. So, that's Daido. And then I want to share with you a little bit from Shantideva and his field guide to becoming a Buddha. One way to guarantee happiness is to rejoice in the good qualities of others, to turn our minds to that. Just before we do that, for example, we can turn our minds to criticism or we can turn our minds to appreciation. So look at your hand right now and find something wrong with it. Maybe find a few things wrong with it. How hard is that? You can just really make a list here of all the things that are wrong with this hand, right? Not hard, get critical about it. Okay, let's shake that off. Now look at this hand with a mind of appreciation. Rejoicing in this hand's good qualities. Has anything changed about this hand? It is our mind that has changed. So Shantideva says that is a way to guarantee happiness. It's to simply rejoice in the good qualities of others. So he says, speak with honest words, coherently, with candor, in a clear, harmonious voice. Abandon partiality, rejection, and attraction, and speak with moderation, gently. I like this part. And catching sight of others, think that it will be through them that you will come to Buddhahood. So look upon them with open, loving hearts. Catching sight of others, think that it will be through them that you come to Buddhahood. So look on them with open, loving hearts. There is no way we can do this ourselves. There's no way. A little bit more from Shantideva, and then I'll talk a little bit about my practice. So he goes into specifically the three disciplines. He teaches extensively on the three disciplines, not harming, gathering virtue, and benefiting others, which are, in fact, like the three pure precepts. So in the category of not harming, this is where he talks about how we might speak to and about each other. When the urge arises in the mind to feelings of desire or wrathful hate, do not act, be silent, do not speak, and like a log of wood, be sure to stay. Just make like a log. When the mind is wild with mockery and filled with pride and haughty arrogance, when you want to show the hidden faults of others, to bring up old dissensions or to act deceitfully, and when you want to fish for praise or criticize and spoil another's name or use harsh language, sparring for a fight, it's then, like a log, you should remain. There's more. When you yearn for wealth, attention, fame, a circle of admirers serving you, and when you look for honors, recognition, it's then that, like a log, you should remain. And when you want to do another down and cultivate advantage for yourself, when the wish to gossip comes to you, it's then that, like a log, you should remain. Impatience, indolence, faint-heartedness, and likewise haughty speech and insolence, attachment to your side, when these arise, it's then that, like a log, you should remain. Examine thus yourself from every side. Note harmful thoughts and every futile striving. Thus it is that heroes in the bodhisattva path apply the remedies to keep a steady mind. This is at least hopeful. With perfect and unyielding faith, with steadfastness, respect, and courtesy, with modesty and conscientiousness, work calmly for the happiness of others. When doing virtuous acts beyond reproach, to help ourselves or for the sake of others, let us always bear in mind the thought that we are selfless, like an apparition. And here is that again, that is the key, that are the source of so much of this complaining and wrong speech is ultimately at root that we think there's a self or we think we have some territory that we want to protect. So I ran across the 21-day complaint-free challenge and impulsively, publicly said that I was going to do it. And what it is, I came to realize, was that it is an attempt, it is a practice by which you go for 21 consecutive days without complaining, or gossiping, or criticizing, or being sarcastic. All those things for 21 consecutive days. And if you catch yourself doing any one of those things, the practice includes a bracelet. It doesn't have to be. This is actually the complaintfreeworld.org bracelet. But you can wear a rubber band or do any other thing. When you catch yourself complaining, then you switch your bracelet to the other wrist and start over on day one. You start over on day one. So I went back and looked at my original post on Facebook, and I'm taking up the 21-day complaint-free challenge. Here it is. My friend Mary said, I think I'd need a complaint choke collar. Someone said, that's a great idea. And then here's my naivety, right? I'm already nervous about the start over thing. 21 days is May 1st. I'll keep track of slip-ups and see what happens. Okay, that was almost a year ago. My friend Catherine, oh, that sounds good, and a challenge. My friend Julia, oh, wow, I need that practice for the rest of my life challenge. Ack! My friend Seth said, is this the 21-day challenge or the 21-year challenge? Because, yeah, this might take a while. And so the guy who started this, he wrote a book, and he says it takes most people 4 to 7 months. I'm on month 10. No, 11. I'm in it to win it. I'm gonna keep going. There is someone in this room who has completed it, who is smart enough not to advertise the fact that they are doing the practice. So please feel free to share your success. So I'll just say a little bit about the different aspects here. Complaining is speech with a negative feeling tone. So you can say facts, you can notice facts on the ground, but if it has an emotionally negative quality to it, then it's officially a complaint. And that's usually expressed as someone who cannot solve your problem, right? It's one thing to say, oh, waiter, the soup is a little cold, right? Would you please warm it up? That's just a statement of fact and a request. If I leave the restaurant with my friend, that soup was terrible. Wasn't that restaurant horrible? That's a complaint. Criticizing is a complaint wielded as a direct attack. You. Those are pretty obvious. Gossiping is saying things about someone that you wouldn't probably say if they were sitting right next to you, or saying it with an inflection that you would not use if they were sitting right next to you. Also, triangulating is another form of complaining. So if I have a issue with somebody and I talk to somebody else about it, and it's not really my game plan to like have them help me directly talk to that person, it really is just to maybe get this person on my side or feel better about what I said or what I did. And then sarcasm, he talks about sarcasm as a negative comment with a humorous escape hatch. And one thing I learned about sarcasm is that it comes from the Latin root sarco, which means ripping away or tearing of the flesh, right? Like sarcoma, right? And this is what sarcasm does, isn't it? I mean, it's funny though, right? Like that, it was almost like I had to grieve, because that was a big part of my sense of humor, but it actually can be very cruel. Here's a definition of sarcasm, a sharp and often satirical or ironic utterance designed to cut or give pain. A mode of satirical wit depended on its effect on bitter, caustic, and often ironic language that is usually directed against an individual. Another definition, a form of irony in which apparent praise conceals another scornful meaning. For example, a sarcastic remark directed at a person who consistently arrives 15 minutes late for appointments might be, oh, you've arrived exactly on time. Right? It's the tone, isn't it? So my experience, and I don't want to intimidate you. This practice has been wonderful. At first, it was like complaint-o-rama. Just when you begin to recognize, I mean, the bracelet was almost invisible. It was moving so fast from wrist to wrist, like just constant. And that has slowed down considerably. And I have gotten as far as day 11. Six of those were at session. I have complained while at session in interview. I did. I'm stepping up my game. I'm in the remedial class here of the complaint-free world. And so what I've started to do is write down all of my complaints. I have this little notebook, and I carry it with me. And they only happen anymore every few days. So I write them in here. But I can find patterns now about when they happen and what they are. So, I mean, there were things that, one of the things that was amazing to me at first when I started this was I would complain by myself, aloud. One of them that I recall was watching some funny video, some clickbait thing that's like, watch this hilarious sea lion do this thing. So I click on it and it was, not terribly entertaining. And I said out loud, well, that was dumb, right? There's nobody around, just complaining. Or, noticing the apple was mushy, having to say that out loud, or cursing in the car, forgetting my water bottle when I went to the gym. Things like that I noticed were happening a lot, just like complaining. But I also noticed a pattern in complaining with other people, commiserating, which is another interesting word, isn't it? Commiserating. That's a way to kind of bond with other people. And today's day two for me, because yesterday I was having coffee with another therapist and totally just saw it coming. We were talking about health insurance companies. And like, I lose my mind when I talk about health insurance companies. It is amazing. This is why I can't actually call them. I have a billing person actually talk to them for me. But even when I talk about them, I called them the devil yesterday. So I know I need to watch out for that. And then my other pattern that I notice is that I complain to Boncho, lucky guy, which is sarcasm. In our how was your day kind of thing, I notice that there's a distinct feeling of disconnection from myself when I am complaining, when I am on autopilot and just my mouth is going and what's coming out isn't so great. And so the other surprise is how worthwhile it is for me, how it's like really filtered so much of what exits my mouth. And is such a, we can see here in the similarities to the teachings, right? It's pretty much all included. All of the teachings of the Buddha and all the different precepts are in here around speech. So you don't have to do the whole entire purple bracelet program. I've heard that February is now, there's a movement for February to be a complaint-free month. It's nice that it's the shortest one. It doesn't include the other three extra categories. It's just no complaining. Or you could just notice one of those categories. But I found it incredibly beneficial. Is there anything anybody wants to ask or share? There's not a lot of time. Yeah. Thoughts are fine. Yeah, you can think, because like.
But what if you're perseverating over sarcastic?
Yeah. As long as it doesn't come out your mouth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we can control our mouth, then maybe we can start to control the mind. Yeah. 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 Other relationships too. I mean, it's just not a. I'm a less complaining person. I'm a less negative person. And really, you can come at it from a couple of different ways. You can come at it from the just fake it till you make it and just, I'm going to just change my behavior. And that's a benefit to everyone around me. Certainly, I'm not just complain person. But you can come at it from the inside and actually see the perfection, right? See what's right. Rejoice in the virtue of all beings. And when I endeavor to do that, I mean, that's actually getting at the root of it, isn't it? Yeah. All right. So, in closing, did you have Loja?
I want to ask about the triangulation.
Yes. Right.
Mm-hmm. But I find at times it helps me to verbalize my thoughts mm-hmm. in order to see if they really make sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it would be like, what are some ways to really try to make that as skillful a process as you can, right? You can make that person anonymous so that they don't know who you're talking about. It's really important to notice your intention, and if there's any right, like if there's any self-making in there, I'm trying to be right or make myself in a better light. So one of the features of triangulation is that there are three roles sometimes of victim, persecutor, and rescuer, right? And so if you are feeling any of those energies at all, then it's probably not, it may be there may be some benefit to it, but there may also be some harmfulness to it, I think. It's just one of those things. The Buddha never said, yeah, go ahead, but it's just be very careful. I think that would be very careful territory. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just be careful. And this is, don't ever not complain. There may be very painful things that happen, but it should be rare. We're actually living in a pretty luxurious situation for the most part, and have not much really to complain about. So to close, I'll just repeat that little phrase from the 12 steps. Talk to each other, reason things out with someone else, but let there be no gossip or criticism of one another. Instead, let the understanding, love, and peace of the program grow in you one day at a time. And then from Shantideva, and catching sight of others, think that it will be through them that you come to Buddhahood. So look on them with open, loving hearts.